Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In 1966, Martin Luther King Jr. told a gathering of the Medical Committee for Human Rights that of all the forms of inequality, injustice in health is the most shocking and the most inhumane. 3 decades after those remarks, today's guest, Dr. Damon Tweedy, entered Duke University School of Medicine as one of a half dozen black students on scholarship, and his professors couldn't stop talking about race. They would sometimes mention Asians, Latinos, and Native Americans, but their analysis usually compared blacks and whites. Each time the demographics of a new disease came up, Tweedy's stomach turned. He knew exactly where they were heading. A month into his first year in medical school, a professor asked him if he was in the classroom to fix the lights. When he went on to become a doctor, a sick patient demanded a white doctor. Dr. Tweedy writes about these personal experiences and disparities in the healthcare system in his new memoir, Black Man in a White Coat. Only 5% of practicing physicians are black today, compared with more than 13% of Americans overall. Dr. Damon Tweedy is a graduate of Duke Medical School and Yale Law School. He's assistant professor of psychiatry at Duke University Medical School and staff physician at the Durham VA Medical Center. And Dr. Damon Tweedy joins us from the studios of WRAL in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Dr. Tweedy. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Well, it's nice to have you. You know, when I was reading the first part of your book about what you dealt with as a student, I couldn't help but thinking about when, like, right after Black Lives Matter really took off, a number of young black medical students took photos together, some of them wearing hoodies, but also in their white lab coat with the hashtag Black Lives Matter. And I wondered, wow, I wonder if they're dealing today with what Dr. Tweedy dealt with. Well, how long has it been since you've been in Duke Medical School?
So I graduated in 2000, so 15-year reunion's coming up pretty soon.
Okay, yeah. So I just wondered, are they dealing with this? I mean, talk a little bit about that day. You were on a high. It was your first month. You were feeling really good, and then your professor asked if you were there to fix a light.
Yeah, so, you know, this book really kind of covers two dimensions. So the one issue is the health disparities within the African-American community and really trying to explore all the many reasons that go into that. So that's really one part of the story. The second part of the story is really my own journey, you know, and how it's been unique as an African-American medical student and physician. So it really sort of follows my life through the in medical training through the lens of race. So that's really the stories that I'm telling. So in that first, you know, about a month into my first year in medical school, I'm coming from a working class community, all black, coming to this private school where many of the classmates are, you know, children of doctors and professors and lawyers, those sorts of things, really professional class. My parents didn't go to college, so there was already that sort of uncertainty. And then being an African-American student on this scholarship where you're trying to get minority students, there's a lot of uncertainty already built into it. And then one day I come into the classroom, and about a month into the class, month into the year, and the professor, you know, he comes up to me in a sort of angry, irritated way and says, "Are you here to fix the lights in the classroom?" And, you know, so my first thought was, you know, did I do something wrong? Did I dress the right way? Did I groom myself the right way? Or, you know, what was wrong? And so I looked around and, you know, I was dressed the same way as my classmates. So there's just one obvious difference, you know, in my physical appearance. In terms of my, you know, skin color. And that was sort of the thought that I had. And it was like, wow, you know, I'm already dealing with all these other issues. And now there's this other question about whether I even belong here.
I was wondering, how did the rest of that class go? What was your relationship like with that professor for the rest of the year?
Well, so that particular professor, we was broken down into like quarters. And so you only had, different professors for each different quarter. And so this was the first quarter. And yeah, so I mean, I talk about in the book, you know, how was I going to respond to this situation? I felt like I'd been sort of, you know, slighted or stereotyped or whatever in a pretty unfortunate way. And how was I going to you know, deal with that situation? And for me, really, the solution was to just sort of buckle down and study around the clock and kind of prove to this professor that I belong there. And yeah, so we had one other encounter. So after the final exams, I did very well. I just ended up having the second highest grade in the course. And we had this encounter at the end, and it's sort of exchange. It was really awkward because I think he recognized what had happened before, but he didn't really want to, didn't know how to sort of acknowledge it. And it was a very awkward exchange. And that was really the last time that we, you know, talk to each other. Mm.
You also write that your professors in medical school couldn't stop talking about race. They would sometimes talk about Native Americans, mm-hmm. Asians, and Latinos, but their analysis sure. usually compared blacks and whites. You write that each time the demographics of a new disease came up in a lecture, my stomach twisted. I knew where this was heading. Seated in a sea of mostly white and Asian faces, I wondered how this information affected their views of black people, whether they already had biases against us, and whether any of this impacted the way they saw me.
Yeah, so, you know, being in medical school is hard enough as it is, right, for anyone. And so there was this, sort of this whole other element of psychological kind of baggage, if you will, that I was kind of juggling, this whole idea of, you know, do I belong in this setting? Am I going to make it in this setting? So that was the one piece of it. But then there was this whole other piece where professors were telling you, you were learning about every disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, cancer. And they always had two statements to make. One was that it was more common in African Americans. And then the other, second statement was that African Americans who get a given disease do worse. But for me, the missing question was why and what could we do about it? Mm. And so it didn't seem to get answers. And so a lot of this book is really trying to explore what that was all about and what the answers were.
And what is it like today? Because now there's so much new information out there. In fact, the LA Times has an amazing story called Black Patients Fare Better Than Whites When Both Get the Same Health Care. And so here's what they found. On most health measures, blacks fare worse than whites, as all of your professors talked about in your classes.
Sure.
Differences mm-hmm. that have been attributed to socioeconomic factors. And this piece writes, but if there were a health system in which all patients basically got the same care, would the disparity still exist? And it turns out they look at the VA. That is the system. A new analysis of about 3 million patients at the VA has found a different kind of racial divide. Blacks do significantly better than whites. Over a 9-year period, researchers found that the adjusted mortality rate of blacks was 24% lower than that of whites. And this is according to a study in the journal Circulation. So this is really interesting information. Do you think, is this being taught in medical schools today? Well, what if we had a level playing field?
I think it's taught. Certainly, it certainly is discussed. I'm not sure if it's discussed at the medical school level, maybe as much as it should be. That's a really interesting study. I'm just trying to process it as you're sharing it with me. I think one issue is that black people, because we were at a worse starting point on most health parameters, there's certainly much greater room for improvement. And so when a black person, African Americans as a group, are put into a situation where the treatment is comparable, I do think there's a potential for greater gains. It makes me think about this one study that was done on high blood pressure, and it was looking at dietary interventions for how to treat high blood pressure, like a lot of low salt foods and a lot of high fruit and vegetable sort of diet. It's called the DASH diet. And one of the findings was that in a subset of the study, African Americans actually did do better because they actually had greater drops in blood pressure from the diet. And there were a variety of thoughts as to why that might be.
Well, and so to talk a little bit more about this study, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. And this LA Times piece, uh-huh. Dr. Kemyar sure. Kalantarzadeh, a uh-huh. epidemiologist at UC Irvine, is quoted as saying, we thought we were going to show that they, blacks and whites, do the same if the same care mm-hmm. is offered to both groups, but we mm-hmm. found that blacks do even better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my thought about that is probably that, I'm not familiar with the specific study, but my thought would be that if African Americans are at a worse starting point and previously had worse healthcare treatment, then if you're in a condition where you're suddenly put in a situation where the treatment is comparable, then you may show greater gains. And so that would be the way that I probably would best understand that study without actually having a chance to read it.
And so when we talk about healthcare disparities, uh-huh. what really stands out for you the most when you look at the care that whites get and non-whites get?
Well, I mean, I think there's, when you talk about health disparities, and so in the book, what I do is I use personal encounters with patients to really illustrate these bigger problems that are occurring and sort of looking at it from different lenses. So there's one obvious issue is this big healthcare system issue. African Americans are less likely to get medical care, more likely to be in segregated areas where you not have access to doctors. You know, so these are all real issues, less access to specialists. Mm-hmm. So in one story I talk about in the book is the time when I went out to a rural community where the patients did not have health insurance. They were all African American, and it was pretty clear that the kind of care you could offer them was substandard to the extent that you couldn't. The medications that you'd want to give them, the things that you'd learn about in the textbooks, you couldn't really give them because of issues around not having health insurance, you know, being in poverty, You know, so all, you know, not being able to have a specialist who could manage a particular illness. So all these things were really real issues. And so that was a really vivid illustration of that. So I think that's really the first layer of why we have these problems. But then there's other layers as well that I talk about in the book, as far as the doctor-patient relationship being a huge factor. So the book really sort of uses several examples to illustrate the different facets of why we have these problems.
Dr. Damon Tweedy is author of the new memoir, Black Man in a White Coat. He writes about his personal experiences going through medical school, becoming a doctor, interacting with patients. And then he also weaves in a number of stark statistics about our healthcare system. Dr. Damon Tweedy is a graduate of Duke Medical School and Yale Law School. He's assistant professor of psychiatry at Duke University Medical Center and staff physician at the Durham VA Medical Center. And we'd love to hear from you. What questions do you have about Dr. Damon Tweedy? If you are a medical professional and you've seen racial bias play out in your field, we'd love to hear from you. If you are a student, a Black student, and would like to talk about your personal experiences, I'd love to hear what and if anything has really changed when it comes to your experience in medical school. Mm-hmm. And if you've experienced racial bias as a patient, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org, feedback@yourcallradio.org. I mean, you have so many interesting personal stories in here, and I'm sure a lot of these have been painful for you to tell, because how many times do you want a reporter to ask you? So, Dr. Tweedy, tell us about the time when that patient asked for a white doctor. But it's important to talk about these issues because they don't really get talked about enough, although they're getting talked about more. But that patient said, quote, "Go tell your boss I don't want no black doctor. I could have stayed home if I wanted to see a country-ass doctor."
Right. So there are a couple incidents, you know, that I talk about in the book. And yes, it is painful. Certainly at the time it was very painful. And even on, as you think about it now, you know, there's certain pain that goes with that. There are really ways in which as an African-American doctor. So again, there are about 4%, 4 to 5% of practicing doctors are African-American. So you're, and it's even lower in many specialties. So you're definitely an outlier in many ways. And the perception that you often get from people is very different. And so that's a lot of what the book explores. And so there's one chapter where I talk about a case where there's a white patient who doesn't want to see a black doctor and uses racial slurs to say that. And then another time where there's actually an African-American patient who sort of has internalized this idea that whatever is black is less than capable or less than white. And so, and in that same situation, didn't want to see a black doctor. So it's certainly something that I've struggled with, and it's certainly a unique aspect to this idea of being an African-American doctor.
How do you deal with that? I mean, you obviously never know when it's going to come.
Yeah, so at that time, so it happened more when I was younger. So now I think I'm an older person now. I look older, obviously. And I think people might think, well, if I've gotten this far, maybe I know what I'm doing, you know, that sort of thing. but you know, when I was younger, there certainly was a lot of that doubt that I dealt with quite a bit. And and it would manifest itself in several ways. Sometimes it would be the book. I talk about pretty dramatic situations, but often it would come in much more subtle ways where people would make these or would hint at the idea that they were really surprised to see a black doctor, whether there's a look on their face or the first comments that would come out of their mouth. They may say, oh, well, gee, I thought I would see you playing basketball in the NBA. I'm really surprised to see you here in the exam room. You know, something small like that. Or patients might say, well, you know, I have black friends, and so it's great to see a black doctor. But they would say it in an awkward sort of way so you would know that they were really uncomfortable in the situation. How I handled it, I mean, it varied. Sometimes it would be a hard thing to deal with. And sometimes, but for me, I always felt like I had to, it was an opportunity. I guess the way I interpret it is it was an opportunity to sort of show this person something to combat whatever stereotypes they may have come in to examine with. So I looked at it more as an opportunity rather than sort of a negative thing, even though it certainly is negative. I try to frame it in a way so that I could cope with it and make it more as an opportunity.
Right.
Now, certainly that's a whole nother added layer of stress that other doctors may not have to deal with on top of all the other things you have to do as a doctor.
Yeah,
but it's something I've kind of had to embrace.
Right. I can't imagine. How do you talk to young black students who are currently in medical school or maybe their first few years as a doctor or an intern, for example? How do you talk to them about these issues?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things from writing this book is some of the reception I've gotten. A lot of people have used it as a form to kind of share their own experiences. So I've had an inbox full of emails, you know, when I've gone on tour and met people at different places where a lot of people have talked about these issues and sort of shared very similar experiences that they've had. So yeah, I've talked to them. I shared mine. I think it's been people are very appreciative. They will ask, like, how do you deal with this situation? What should I do in this situation? You can't always give them the right answer because it kind of varies. And I often tell them you have to kind of pick your battles in a way. Because one of the downsides is if you let it all consume you, then it can affect your performance. And that's something that often happens in African-American students, is that you deal with all these other issues. And then if you get too focused on it, it can actually impact your academic and professional performance. And that's an unfortunate reality. So I try and help them cope with and navigate this process as best I can.
Dr. Damon Tweedy is out with a new memoir called Black Man in a White Coat, A Doctor's Reflections on Race and Medicine. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. You have another story in your book about Leslie, who miscarried due to, well, I wanted to ask you if we know it was due to her drug use, but while you're critical of the nurse's clinical judgment, who tells the doctor to tie Leslie's tubes, you also confront your own feelings. You write, as a crack-abusing pregnant woman, Leslie had put the worst face of Black America on full display for this white medical audience. Much of my life had been devoted to combating and defeating vicious racial stereotypes. But in witnessing the pathology of Leslie's behavior and the doctor's and nurse's reaction to it, I suddenly felt naked, as if someone had stripped me of my white coat and left both of us to share the same degrading spotlight.
Yeah, so I mean, that's, you know, so again, this book's very honest. It's a very sort of real, I put my own sort of shortcomings front and center. And this is not something where I'm speaking from some higher moral level and telling people and lecturing people. This is very much a personal story. And yeah, so this is very early in medical school. And, you know, to answer your question, do we know for sure that it was from the cocaine use? No, there's no way of possibly knowing that. What happens is you're in a setting, you're in an emergency room kind of setting, you make quick judgments, and that was something that, based on what information we knew, that was something that likely was a contributing factor. But there certainly could have been other factors as well. You can't really get that in that instant sort of evaluation. But yeah, so there were my own issues with that, but then there was also this reaction, the way the medical community kind of responded to her, where the first instinct was to sterilize her. I mean, this is obviously a very, this is like a 19-year-old woman who's had she had a very awful background that we only later learned about. And the first reaction was to sort of sterilize her and sort of put her in this category that she couldn't ever get better. This is her life. And so, and then there was also this reaction by another person, the staff member, who said he didn't want to, like, operate on her because, you know, she wasn't worth his time. So there's, you really get this sense of how someone like that could be maligned in the healthcare system and obviously not receive the best treatment. So there's no doubt about that. So that story really illustrates a lot of different complicated things, including my own sort of inexperience and also my misgivings and the own issues that I deal with in terms of race and dealing with how interacting with white people. So it's a really complicated story.
Yeah. Well, and how did that affect your years since, or even today? How does that affect how you respond or don't respond to stereotypes about, for example, a pregnant Black woman who has taken crack, or there's so many others? I mean, do you feel like your role, if you are in a room of white doctors, is to listen closely and intervene if needed, if they say something that's stereotypically racist?
You know, so there are times when I have, and there are times when I haven't. And so that's one of the chapters in the book puts me back as an intern, so first year after medical school. And there was a time when a patient came into the hospital with chest pain, wanted to make sure he didn't have a heart attack. We did all those sort of tests, and so everything seemed like it was a medical kind of treatment. But then the patient wanted to, rather than take a blood pressure medicine, wanted to change his diet and start losing weight. And then it became this discussion about whether the patient was neurotic or had some kind of mental illness because he wasn't responding to the doctor in the way that the doctor wanted him to. So that one really took me aback. And so in that particular case, it took me by surprise. I didn't even know how to respond to it. And I talk about in the book how I didn't say anything, and maybe I should have. But there have been other cases, you know, more recently as I've gotten older, where I've had similar sorts of situations where I have responded to a doctor. And actually the doctors in this case were actually very receptive to that response. And they were so much because they had sort of internal things that they hadn't really, or unconscious sort of thoughts they really weren't even aware of. And so bringing those to light was actually very helpful. And they've now used those when they teach other young doctors and medical students about these issues. So
interesting.
I think there's a exactly. So I think there's certain. So as I've gotten older, I've tried to speak up more about it and tried to also use, not in a sort of stereotypical way, but to always sort of think about things and think about where you're coming from and where the patient could be coming from, and trying to really navigate both of those, because we all have our own filters, right, that we bring into our relationships, and just being able to sort of think through those and be aware of those, and trying to not use it, and to try and be aware of those and to use that to help the patient to the best that you can.
We have an email from a listener who says, as a surgeon who is both African-American and a woman, a friend of mine has had your guest experience in spades. She says when she first meets a patient, they will look to the residents flanking her, to the nurses, anywhere but at her to find the doctor. Each time she watches them slowly working their way down the list of internalized assumptions of what a doctor looks like before accepting that she is indeed their surgeon. Perhaps given the scarcity of African-American surgeons, particularly women, this could be somewhat forgiven, but that's mild compared to many stories she's told. The story which most struck me is when she was in the public restroom in the hospital. A white hospital employee snapped at her, "This place is a mess. Clean it up." My friend was in her scrub, so it would have been clear she was some sort of medical officer, not a janitor. If the woman had taken a moment to check my friend's ID, she could have quickly assessed my friend was her superior, far above in the hospital hierarchy. But it seems even today in the 21st century, all that woman could see was a black maid.
Yes, I mean, so that's one of the things with the book is that I've had a lot of people send me information, sort of sharing their own stories, like the one you described. And some people have initially thought that, well, I went in medical school in North Carolina. That's the South. There's this whole history of the South being more racist than other parts of the country. But I think that really is not. I think these stories really are there everywhere, and so all across the country. And my story is just one representation of that.
Well, thank you for that email. And you can email us feedback@yourcallradio.org. If you are in the medical profession, black, brown, if your friend is, and you have stories that you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you. Mm-hmm. If you've experienced racial bias as a patient, we'd love to hear from you. And if you have any general questions for Dr. Damon Tweedy, give us a call at 866-798-8255. Let's go next to Paul in Santa Cruz. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I can see clearly how deeply steeped in tradition our culture is in terms of anti-black, and I'm not surprised that it crosses the class lines, you know, of not just poor African people, but people who have made it in the system. I was put into jail at UC Davis when I was part of a coalition fighting against the Bakke decision. I don't know if either of you remember that, but that was a subpar performing white medical student who felt he got dissed out of medical school by the admission of some black students who were getting into medical school. And the university recruited him to be cannon fodder to fight that program to get black medical school students in. So the Bakke decision was huge, and we were a part of that process of fighting against that decision, as well as denying tenure to a lot of black professors at the time at UC Davis. So, history.
No, I was going to say, yes, I do write about that decision some in the book as well. Yes, so I'm very familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, we were part of that fight.
Go ahead, Paul.
And then I also wanted to mention, too, that you had talked about that poor young woman who was, destroyed by drugs, and how embarrassed you felt at that moment. But I think it's important to remember that all the evidence says that the drugs are actually controlled from higher places, not the lower places.
All right, Paul, thank you for calling in. Sorry to cut you off, but we have to take a break. We'll get Dr. Damon Tweedy to respond right after this.
There are lots of ways to join in today's conversation on Your Call with Rose Aguilar on the phone or by sending an email. The email address is feedback@yourcallradio.org. The toll-free phone number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. Coming up at 11 from the BBC, it's World Have Your Say. And then at noon today from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, it's Bina.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. Pope Francis and Chinese President Xi Jinping are both in the United States, and media coverage has been extensive. Many outlets carried the Pope's speech to Congress this morning, in which he called for the abolition of the death penalty. He addressed poverty and climate change. So what are your thoughts about all of the coverage that the Pope is receiving, and also Chinese President Xi Jinping? We will also talk about the Republicans threatening to shut down the government over federal funding of Planned Parenthood. If any story stood out for you this week, we'd love to talk about it tomorrow. You can email it to feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can also drop us a line. And if you'd like to join us today, we'd love to hear from you. We're speaking with Dr. Damon Tweedy, author of a new memoir, Black Man in a White Coat, A Doctor's Reflections on Race and Medicine. And if you have any personal experiences to share, whether you work in a hospital or as a patient, we'd love to hear from you. Have you experienced any racial bias as a patient? What is your story? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Paul brought up affirmative action, and I wanted to ask you about that. You write in the book that most of the students at Duke largely hailed from well-to-do suburbs. They had attended prestigious brand-name schools. You came from a working-class neighborhood, attended a state university. Your dad didn't finish high school and worked as a meat cutter in a grocery store. Your mom attended segregated inner-city public schools before she worked in the federal government for 40 years. And you write that in a colorblind world, Duke might well have rejected you. At the very least, its admissions committee would not have offered you a full tuition scholarship to its medical school. And when you went to Duke, some colleges were trying to make a concerted effort to recruit black medical students, right?
Yes, many were. So I think this is where this issue of race and kind of in class kind of, you know, coalesce. So a lot of the differences between me so were based on class, right? So, you know, parents weren't educated, didn't have professional jobs in the same way that my classmates did. But then it's also so hard to separate out race from class, because so much of the differences, social class differences that we have are, you know, historically based on race, right? So it's really hard to disentangle those. So I think, you know, affirmative action, you know, there's one way of looking at it strictly in racial terms, but there's also this issue of class and so how important that was and how important that was to how I stood out, and that some of the ways in which I may not have been as prepared as some of my classmates, once you get into a level sort of setting, they can kind of melt away or go away. And that's what actually happened with me once I did get into medical school.
What do you
there's this perception that affirmative action, well, I wouldn't want a doc. People will say, I don't want a doctor who got into medical school based on affirmative action. But really, the more important thing is, how did you do once you got into medical school? That's really the important piece,
right?
Because once you're in school, you're taking the same test, you're doing all the same things. So, you know, I did very well in medical school. So this whole idea that, you know, affirmative action is somehow going to create bad doctors that are going to deliver bad medical care, I think is overstated.
What are your thoughts on efforts today to recruit more black students and also affirmative action? Because as you write in your book, in the mid-1990s, blacks accounted for 7% of medical students, mm-hmm. and that percentage holds steady today. So it really hasn't changed.
Yeah, maybe it's actually gone down a little bit. There's a recent study out from it's called the Association of American Medical Colleges, based in Washington, D.C., and they represent medical schools, the interests of medical schools and academic hospitals. And the report actually showed that the numbers of African-American men have actually sort of stagnated since the late 70s and actually slightly decreased, whereas African-American women, the numbers have increased considerably. So you have now this 2-to-1 ratio between African-American women to African-American men in medical school. Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks to a lot of bigger issues in society in terms of education system, but also the expectations that are in place for African-American men in terms of how we can succeed. I certainly felt those growing up. And the idea of being a doctor was sort of an alien thing coming from me, the community that I came from. Even going to college was seen as a rare thing. And so I think those things really filter down to the community level, and they start from the top of society and really impact people and what they can see for themselves.
And also, when you went to college, not that it was cheap back then, but it was a lot less expensive mm-hmm. than it is today.
That's
true. College costs have just exploded. So access is also probably, it's more of an issue today than it was when you were in college.
Oh, no, I certainly think that's an issue as well. And I think there's, you know, there's a lot of discussion. I don't keep up with it that closely, but there's discussion about how we can make college more affordable. How can we make loans, you know, accessible to students that come from lower income backgrounds? And so, yeah, I think that's a huge deal. I mean, I think that also is a barrier when you talk about medicine. I mean, medical school is really expensive, right? So not only is college expensive, but medical school prices have really soared too. Mm-hmm. So that could really, if you're coming from a sort of less advantaged background, you can just be overly discouraged by the idea of, wow, this costs all this money. It takes all this time to get there. You know, I can't do that. I got to find something more practical and something that's going to give me a return quicker. And so I think that also can discourage many African-Americans as well as other people from lower economic backgrounds.
And also in a piece you wrote for The New York Times and also in your book, you point out that only 5% of practicing doctors are black.
That's true. Yes. Right. So, I mean, so that goes because, I mean, in the past, the numbers, if you go back 40, 50 years, the numbers were even lower. And so I think so that's why the number of practicing doctors is lower than the number of percentage of medical students proportionally. But yeah, I mean, the numbers are really low. And in some specialties, it's even medical specialties, it's even lower than that. And so how to deal with that? And it has real, I think it has real implications in the real world in terms of patients, because we have a population that's 13% African-American. But even that sort of skews it, because if you look at many major cities where these academic hospitals are and where doctors are trained, the numbers of African-American patients is even larger. Like, for instance, in Baltimore, it's 60% of the population is black. In North Carolina and Durham, where Duke is, it's 40%. Atlanta is 50%. So we're really talking about even bigger numbers in many of these communities.
Senator Bernie Sanders is calling for free public education for everyone. Mm-hmm. And, of course, who knows, but I'm wondering if maybe these numbers would go up if that was actually implemented. Mm-hmm. And do you think that, you know, if we did have more black students in medical school, people of color in general, and more doctors who were of color, what effect would that have on the disparities that we're seeing in healthcare today?
It could be helpful in some ways. It's certainly not that alone is not going to fix the problem, but it could be helpful. You know, when I talked about what are the problems, why do we have these disparities? We talked about the system, you know, the big issues at the big level. There's issues with the doctor and the patient. So that's where the numbers could affect. And there's also issues at the community level in terms of individuals and sort of lifestyle patterns. And here also a doctor and a patient issue can be important. So let me just give you one example. So for me, I got diagnosed with high blood pressure in medical school as a first year student. So I'm young, I'm healthy, never thought this would happen to me, even though I did have a family history of high blood pressure, which is one of those diseases that, of course, that's more common in blacks and where black people have worse outcomes. But for me, I even being a doctor and knowing what I needed to do, I still struggled with how to make changes in terms of my diet. And the change, it wasn't so much that I couldn't switch from, you know, fried fish to baked fish because of the texture or the taste. It was a sort of cultural barrier that got in the way, you know, because so much of my life had been about kind of trying to assimilate or not, or how to sort of navigate that. This, it was like an idea that certain foods were attached to a certain background or culture, and that changing that meant representing some kind of loss of identity. And so that's a really complicated thing that I don't know if many doctors would necessarily understand or even be able to talk about with their patients. And so that's something for me, having experienced that and having gone through that, I'm able to talk with patients on a level where they can relate to that. So it's not just about like, well, take this blood pressure pill. It's also about what might be getting in the way of why we're not getting our goals. And so being able to explore that with the patient can really be helpful.
Dr. Damon.
And so that's where an African-American doctor can be helpful. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Dr. Damon Tweedy is author of the new memoir, Black Man in a White Coat, A Doctor's Reflections on Race and Medicine. Dr. Tweedy writes about his experiences as a young man at Duke Medical School. His teacher, during the first month of school, asked him if he was there to fix the lights. When he became a doctor, a sick patient demanded a white doctor. He writes about many personal experiences and disparities, and he backs it up with statistics in the healthcare system in Black Man in a White Coat. And we'd love to hear from you. Are you a medical professional? Have you seen racial bias play out in your field? Or have you experienced racial bias as a patient? Dr. Tweedy writes that black patients, when they do receive treatment, it's far more likely to occur in an emergency room or psychiatric hospital than it is for whites, and less likely to be in the calmer office-based setting where long-term treatment can take place. So if you have any personal stories to share, or if you have any questions for Dr. Tweedy, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. So we were just talking about, you know, making changes to your diet, for example, and how culture really plays a role. And in your book, you stress the importance of behavioral and cultural changes to improve mm-hmm. the health outcomes for your Black patients. And, mm-hmm. you know, so much is tied into this because so many, you know, communities of color don't have access to healthy food. They're essentially food deserts. They're littered with liquor stores. And so what are your thoughts on that and the role that health professionals can play in really speaking out about those issues?
Well, there's certainly a factor. There's no doubt about that. I think, you know, sometimes with doctors, being a doctor is hard. I mean, just first and foremost, for any doctor, there's a lot of pressure to see a large number of patients in a short period of time. And these are real issues. And so I think some ways, sometimes doctors can just sort of feel overwhelmed by what the responsibility, particularly when it's like seen as something beyond what they can handle in the exam room at that given time. Because there's so many, there's a term called social determinants of health, you know, all these other factors that are going on in society that influence health, which are huge. And often as a doctor, you might feel overwhelmed and think, well, there's nothing I can throw your hands up. I can't do anything about that. But then I think there are also many doctors who are so... many doctors are feeling like, well, we need to do something about this. And in different ways they can get involved, whether it's at the community level, whether it's at the policy level. And for me, writing this book was one of my ways of trying to sort of bring awareness to these issues. Because I think awareness is really the first step before we can really go beyond that. And so I think many of us are trying to sort of make a dent in this, each in our own way.
We have an email from Ruby who says, when I needed lung surgery 6 years ago, the Marin oncologist was unequivocal about where I needed to go and who must operate. It was a tricky procedure because of where the nodules in the lung were located. They couldn't be biopsied. They needed to be removed and tested. The surgeon was the head of the department at a nearby internationally acclaimed hospital. My oncologist, tapping away on his computer, said, you'll see so-and-so. You'll love him. He looks like Barack Obama. Of course, the message he was sending was, he's Black. It didn't matter to me, writes Ruby, I wanted the best. When I met the surgeon, though, I thought, wow, President Obama could only wish he looked this good. The surgeon was not only brilliant, but he was extremely knowledgeable about Eastern Europe and immediately surmised that if I had cancer, it would have been caused by working for a few years near Chernobyl. As my husband was also going through cancer at the same time, it answered a lot of questions for both of us. Who cares about the color, she writes.
Go ahead. No, I mean, I think that's, I mean, certainly, I mean, so many of the patients I see are not African-American, and yes, and I think there's something to be said about that. So, like, I think there's a lesson to be said about that. Obviously, the most important thing as a doctor is to be excellent, right? And that's obviously by far the most important thing, and I don't think the goal is necessarily to say every Black patient should see a Black doctor or vice versa. I don't disagree with that at all. I think what I would say and what is important and instructive is that for me, for instance, in the book, I talk about my relationship with white patients and how examples where things at first seemed like they wouldn't work out because there was bias or there were issues like this that took place, and how we were able together to work through that, and how that can be instructive for everyone because it is important. Most doctor-patient relationships are not going to be matched up that way, and so we have to figure out a way to work through that. And so I think I don't totally disagree with what the writer is saying. They make some good points.
All right. Well, thank you for writing in, Ruby. And let's go to another caller, Cherry in Santa Cruz. Hi, Cherry. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. Hi. I had a question regarding the medications that are prescribed based on race. And I wanted to know the doctor's position, like their medications for kidney disease or for high blood pressure that is designed pharmaceutical or pushed based on race. And I'm uncomfortable with that, and I would like to know the doctor's opinion.
All right. Dr. Twitty, were you able to hear Cherry?
Yeah. Did she say she was uncomfortable or comfortable with that? That's the part I missed. She says
uncomfortable with that.
Yeah, I'm curious to know why. I mean, because I think whenever you start talking about genetic differences or biological differences, people, African-American community often will cringe because there's a long history of that being used as a way to sort of make Black people seem inferior. I mean, so there's certainly that real reality historically. At the same time, I don't think we can run from that if there are some things, medications or treatments that really are potentially more beneficial. I don't think that we should run from that. But I understand certainly the sentiment from a historical perspective.
All right. Thank you, Cherry. How often, is it common to have drugs designed based on race?
No, I don't think it's very common. I know there was one medicine several years ago, I think it was a heart medicine, blood pressure medicine, that was thought to be more effective in African Americans. And so I know that generated a lot of media attention at the time.
Hmm.
But in general practice, I mean, from the most part, what you may hear said is that certain types of drugs the black people, maybe it's not metabolized as fast, or it's metabolized faster. But as far as a specific drug being designed specifically for African Americans, other than that one example, I don't think that that's something that's very common, to tell you the truth. I mean, I think it's pretty infrequent. Most times you're just sort of prescribing medications based on the particular condition and not focusing on that to that extent.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Sherry. Today we're speaking with Dr. Damon Tweedy, author of the memoir Black Man in a White Coat, A Doctor's Reflections on Race and Medicine. And if you have any personal stories to share, if you're a medical professional and you've seen racial bias play out in your field, or if you've experienced racial bias as a patient, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And then the larger question, how can we improve healthcare for all? And I hope you can check out the article I mentioned earlier by the LA Times. It's based on a report in the journal Circulation. It's called Black Patients Fare Better Than Whites When Both Get the Same Healthcare. Really interesting study. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's go next to KDF in Oakland. Hi, KDF. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rose. Doctor, I was wondering, vis-a-vis high blood pressure, I've often been concerned that high blood pressure could be a result of long-term racism in individual lives. That is to say, if racism was just automatically, magically reversed, wouldn't the number of white people with high blood pressure spike?
Well, I mean, there's certainly a line of thought that why do African Americans have high blood pressure the way they do? What's interesting is that many studies found that in certain parts of Africa, West Africa, actually high blood pressure is not very common. So there's a curious sort of thing about that. And there's different theories. So one theory does posit that it's the issue of dealing with stress and racism and the legacy of racism. So there's certainly, I think there's probably at least some merit to that. That certainly can affect health and impact health if you sort of carry around, you know, this feeling of sort of feeling like you're less than someone else, or less than, or inferior, or mm-hmm. or, you know, being biased or being stereotyped in different ways. That certainly can play out, and I think that certainly can impact your health.
Well,
it's hard to tease it out in any individual case.
Right. It also reminds me of there's so much media coverage now about, you know, what it's like to be, for example, someone of color, a black man of color, a woman of color, and what they have to deal with, always on alert if a cop comes by, you know, acting out a certain way, not acting out a certain way. And people have said in a lot of the stories that I've read or on social media that they're kind of feeling pretty stressed out about this, and they're wondering if it is affecting their health.
Sure. I mean, it can consume you. I mean, so I think that's one of the challenges that I navigate, because sometimes it can consume you in ways that are detrimental to you, not only to your health, but also to your performance. Mm-hmm. For instance, if you're an African-American doctor or student and you're always sort of worried about this idea that you're going to be perceived as, you know, in a bad way, I think it can actually affect your performance. And so it can be consuming. So I certainly think it can affect your health for sure. So, you know, that one previous emailer, I think, mentioned, why do we talk about race? I think in an ideal world, we wouldn't have to. The sentiment, I think, is right. But I think there's a practical side to that. And it's much more difficult than that person sort of is sort of conveying. You know, just sort of have everything happen to you and then to say, well, race is not going to matter at all. It sounds great, but it's really hard to do in practice.
Well, and also with so much awareness now about the black experience, there's also a lot of stories about first generation college students. And those of us who are first generation college students know what it's like to sit in a room with a bunch of Yale, Harvard educated students and kind of feeling like, can I keep up with this? I don't really know what they're talking about. You know, they're using words my family doesn't use. And so, but it seems to be getting a lot more publicity now, a lot more media coverage.
Right, so there's certainly that aspect to it, but I think because with race, there's a certain element, added element to it, because there is this perception that African Americans are less, you know, intelligent. Right. And so there is an added sort of layer to it on top of sort of the class layer that you're sort of referring to. And I think it does impact you. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that it does.
Well, thank you for calling KDF. We also have an email from Rachel who wanted us to take a look at this article in the LA Times called A Prescription for More Black Doctors. And it's about a small college in New Orleans called Xavier mm-hmm. University. Mm-hmm. And according to the article, Xavier has 3,000 students and consistently produces more black students who apply to and then graduate from medical school than any other institution in the country. Are you familiar with this school?
Yes. So this recent article in the New York Times really brought attention to something that's kind of been known a lot by people in the African-American community. So they really did a great job in sort of bringing this to a wider audience. But yeah, this school has kind of been well known for a long time for producing sort of this really large cadre of African-American medical students. And sort of their success, their model kind of is like, well, we have to sort of realize that many of the students have come from much disadvantaged backgrounds, and we have to sort of structure our whole curriculum around this goal. And they've really had much more success than many other schools. Oftentimes, you know, African Americans in many other schools will feel isolated or embarrassed by their backgrounds. And if you feel isolated, you don't study with other students, and then you also have this sort of fear that you're not going to measure up, and that again, and you can let that consume you, and then that can really affect your performance in real detrimental ways.
Well, thank you for that article, Rachel, and we'll put a link to that at yourcallradio.org right after the show. Dr. Damon Tweedy is author of Black Man in a White Coat, A Doctor's Reflections on Race and Medicine. What are your thoughts on the Affordable Care Act having a substantial impact on creating greater access to health care for low-income individuals? We've done a lot of shows on this, and while it's been pretty difficult for middle-income people, they've seen their premiums mm-hmm. go through the roof. So it has done a lot for poor people who before did not have health insurance.
So what I do in the stories, I use like real kind of personal examples of real people and show how, for instance, not having health insurance causes devastating effects on health. So I go to this rural clinic where the people don't have health insurance, and you see all these health problems that sort of kind of relate from that. And not only health problems, like people may delay seeking care, they may not be able to get care that they need. And then when they do get like emergent care, like at the later stages, then it can cause like economic catastrophe because then you have these large medical bills. So not having health insurance is a huge deal. And so I think this idea, the goal of the Affordable Care Act to a large extent was to increase, expand health insurance coverage. I think that's a good thing. It's such a politicized topic. It's become this whole, because they call it Obamacare. So whenever you have that sort of partisan kind of discussion, people sort of lose sight of the big picture. And I mean, so I think it's just like for me, I see as a doctor, I see patients that are Republican, Democrat, Independent all the time, get sick in the same sorts of ways, have the same sorts of problems. But yet we have this healthcare issue being so politicized. And it's just, I mean, I know it's naive to say that, but it's a really troubling thing as a doctor to see how it impacts things. And so, for instance, with the Affordable Care Act, many states, of course, have not opted to expand Medicaid, for instance, and other sorts of issues and things that I think have limited the ultimate scope of the Affordable Care Act. But at the same time, I think it has had some benefits for sure.
And presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders is calling for a Medicare for all system.
Sure.
What do you think about mm-hmm. that as a doctor?
I think initially that was something that it had even been talked about when they talked about healthcare reform in the beginning, but it sort of got shuttled due to politics. Yeah, I don't think it's probably politically something that could happen, given the way that the Congress and everything is all set up. I certainly think that there could be real benefits to that. Long term, there could be real health benefits that could flow from that. But I think it's probably difficult to happen in our current political climate.
What are your thoughts? How have you been affected by the Black Lives Matter movement? How has that, maybe affected your decision to share these very personal stories?
Well, it's interesting because, this book kind of got off the ground before all this happened, all the sort of issues that have occurred in the last couple of years that really have made race kind of come to the forefront. And some people honestly have questioned, sort of wanted me to take a more aggressive stance when it comes to those issues. But so I came at this book from a much more personal standpoint. Like, this is my personal story, and this is my journey, and this is how race affected my journey. But certainly, I mean, you mentioned at the outset that there were these demonstrations that occurred among medical students. I think it occurred like last December.
Right.
And Yeah, and Curtis, our medical school as well. So it's certainly something, and it's actually what's happened is that as a result of that, we've had a sort of campus-wide sort of conversations about race, and often those aren't helpful, but in this case, the last ones we've had have been very helpful, I think, and they've been really instructive for people to see kind of some of the issues that people are dealing with. So I would say that it's been helpful in the sense that it's allowed me to engage with younger students and really get a sense of where they're coming from and be able to actually mentor some students in ways that maybe would not have happened otherwise. So I would say on that, to that extent, it's been positive.
What can you be more specific? What is it about those conversations that you feel has been more positive?
Well, how to navigate the issues. You have these issues that are happening to you, but how do you deal with it? Like, how do you, I mean, there's always this sort of anger you deal with when you have these certain things happen to you, but how do you deal with that? What battles do you pick? How do you fight the battles? How do you succeed in the face of these situations? Like, how do you succeed in the face of sort of some of this unfairness? And how do you not only succeed, but how do you also reach back and help other people? And so, because a lot of times students just don't, they have this sort of feeling, but they don't really know how to channel it in a way that's constructive. And so a lot of it is sort of helping younger people navigate that issue.
What response have you received from other doctors to your book? Maybe even doctors that you wrote about in your book?
Yeah, it's been positive. You know, all said, it's been really positive. So, you know, I was concerned about that at first because, you know, I'm still at Duke and that's where I went to medical school. But, I shared it with the top brass, if you will, the very top people all throughout the university and the medical system. They were very enthusiastic about getting this message out because, you know, there is this history we've had. We have to confront it. We've made progress, right? I take stock of how we have made progress, but how that progress has been very uneven and how we still have a lot of work to do. And I've had a really positive, I've really been encouraged by the positive feedback that I've gotten.
Well,
I can't say enough about that.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, there's just a conversation happening on so many levels about these issues. What mm-hmm. role are you mm-hmm. hoping to play in that conversation from here on out?
Well, for me, a lot of it has just been educating people. There's so many people are not even aware of these issues. Like, people are aware of the issues in the criminal justice system, right? We hear about that all the time, right? But about how the health, race in the healthcare sector plays out in the ways in which people had never considered that. So I think being aware of these things is really the first step. But then the next layer is how can we do things better and how can we inspire people to do better? So a lot of the stories I tell are examples of that and things that I hope people can learn from.
Well, thank you for sharing your stories. Dr. Damon Tweedy is author of the memoir Black Man in a White Coat, A Doctor's Reflections on Race and Medicine. Dr. Tweedy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. This is great.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. Pope Francis and Chinese President Xi Jinping are both in the United States this week, and media coverage has been extensive. Many outlets carried the Pope's speech to Congress, in which he called for the abolition of the death penalty and addressed poverty and climate change. We'll also discuss Republicans threatening to shut down the government over federal funding for Planned Parenthood. What stood out for you in the media this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.